That music must mean it is time for OWC Radio 2.0. This is episode number 8. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to this episode. It's going to be a fun one. I've got an interview that actually I've already done with Larry O'Connor. He is the CEO and founder of Otherworld Computing, and I've been wanting to have him on the show, but you know, he's a very busy guy, and it doesn't always work out the times that I have to record the show. Doesn't always work out with his schedule, but we finally got him. I finally got him on the show. I was really, really excited. And we're going through a lot of different topics, and that's, like I said, is going to come at the second half of the show. Actually, a little bit more than the second half of the show, because it went about 40, 45 minutes, and I don't want to make this an hour and a half episode. But it was a really fun interview. I think you guys will really, really enjoy it. But first, I wanted to talk about a few things. I saw this link at Daring Fireball, John Gruber's website, to a YouTube video. It's called the New Digital Tattoo for the Moto X. I hope you guys, I'll put a link on the website for you guys to follow and go over to YouTube and watch it. It's a way, I can't stop laughing. It's a way to unlock your phone. Because I suppose the Apple way of just typing in 4 digits or putting your fingerprint against the sensor to unlock your phone is just too difficult. So the geniuses came up with a digital tattoo. It's a little wafer thin sticker that you put on your arm or wherever you want, I suppose. It's waterproof and it lasts about 5 days, and you just tap your phone against it and it unlocks your phone. I can't imagine anybody in their right mind wanting this, to walk around with this little stupid looking thing taped to you. And it would be one thing if kind of like the tape disappeared and it actually looked like a tattoo, but that's not what it looks like. It's like this gold etching computer chip on a Band-Aid just stuck to your skin. It looks completely ridiculous. And I don't know what problem this product is trying to solve. And look, not every product is created to solve a problem. Some products are created for entertainment, which I guess is solving a problem of boredom, right? But, you know, most products are created to address an issue or to solve a problem or to enrich someone's life. I don't know what this product does on any level. I just can't imagine anybody going, you know what? I do want to buy a little digital unlocking sticker that I stick to my body and I wear it for 5 days simply so I can answer my phone without having to enter a code or to press my thumb against a sensor. I don't get it at all. I really don't. Maybe I'm just an old prudish guy that I'm grumpy and I don't get it. I don't know. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And in today's world, there's a lot of products out there that just simply doesn't make sense. And I don't want to exclude Apple from this category because, you know, the rumors that's been going around for years, there's really two of them. The wearable watch type of device and an actual Apple TV that's a TV, not the Apple TV that we have now that's on the fourth generation now of Apple TVs. I know it's called Apple TV 3 on their website, but remember there was the original half a pizza box sized thing before they went with the small hockey puck sized Apple TVs. But regardless, the actual TV that's an Apple TV and the wearables iWatch type of thing. And I kind of enjoy, I don't know if you do, but I kind of enjoy reading all the speculation and opinions about these theoretical products and whether Apple should do it or shouldn't do it. And I don't usually talk about it much myself because, it's like watching paint dry. You're talking about something that doesn't exist, may never exist, and it seems like a waste of time to talk about something that may never even happen. Why get your hopes up or even get upset about something that may never not even occur? But it does start to look like now, with some of the stuff that Apple's patented, with all the noise that's going around in some very reputable websites that usually are correct when it comes to predicting Apple products, which means they have insider sources. And Apple is much more porous than it had been in the past. I mean, everybody knows that there's a 4.7 and a 5.5 inch iPhone coming out this year. Everybody already knows that. We already know that it's going to have a sapphire screen. I almost kind of feel sorry for Apple that they can't have an event and unveil this, and it's like everybody's freaking out because they've never seen anything like it. We kind of already know what's coming. It's going to have a 13 megapixel camera from the reports that I'm seeing. And again, these are very good sources. These are sites that usually get it right. They don't really participate in unsubstantiated rumor. So going back to the watch to start with, I used to wear a wristwatch, and I got used to the feel of one, you know, around my wrist. Nowadays, I never wear a wristwatch, and the reason is simple. I don't need one. I've got my phone, and I'm trying to figure out what Apple can do that the Android market hasn't already done when it comes to rich wristwatches, which has been, by the way, colossal failures for everyone who's made one so far. Motorola is not selling these things in any significant numbers. I see postings on eBay and Craigslist all the time from people who got one free with their new smartphone and they don't want it. They don't need it. Or they used it and it's not very good. So what could Apple bring to the table that these companies haven't already? Well, I think it could be very significant changes. And it'd probably, from a functionality standpoint, work much better than what's already been released. That being said, I can't imagine my wanting one. I'm trying to figure out what I could have on a small screen on my wrist that doubles as a watch. And let's be honest, if it's a watch, I don't want to have to push a button to see what time it is. I should just look at it and it should give me the time. So obviously battery is going to be a concern there. But what could Apple really put on that screen to tie it to my iPhone or iPad or Mac that would really make it worthwhile for me to have? Maybe some kind of a near field communications in that, you know, when I sit down on my Mac, it sees that I'm wearing the watch and it turns on and it syncs this and it does that and I know it's me. But I don't want to wear a watch just for that. I can just reach over and tap a key and my computer wakes up, right? What's on my iPhone that I would rather have on my wristwatch? I can't think of anything. If I get a text message, I'm just going to look at my phone. It's got a bigger screen. Unless this wristwatch is the size of my forearm, it's going to be easier to read any kind of a notification on the phone itself than looking at your wristwatch. So for me, notifications, it doesn't make any sense. Some people said a music controller. Well, that might be a good idea for some people. Maybe you're a jogger and you'd rather keep the phone in your pocket instead of having it strapped to your forearm like I've seen people do, or their waist, or putting it in a fanny pack or whatever. But even then, I don't know. I don't get it. Now, there is the health aspects. It could read your heartbeat. It could track what you're doing. But again, I've got an iPhone for that. Now, the iPhone itself, by itself, can't read my heartbeat. But I don't think people who work out that could really use a heart monitor during exercise, I don't think that's a big enough market for Apple to come out with a brand new product for. In fact, it wasn't selling as well for Nike that Nike completely abandoned that market. They're not making those health band things anymore. They got out of it. And if Nike can't make a fitness type of thing work and successful, I can't imagine that Apple or anybody else is going to be able to. So I don't really get this product category. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not seeing a larger picture. Maybe your lifestyle is so significantly different from mine that this is something that you absolutely want and absolutely need. I know a lot of people who bought the Pebble, for instance, and they thought it was really cool, but they never use it, or it wasn't as cool as they thought. I don't know. I don't get the whole wristwatch wearable computing device at all. But I would love to hear what you have to say. Am I wrong? Am I missing the obvious? Which, according to my wife, is not only plausible, it's probably probable. maybe I'm missing the whole idea of the digital tattoo for the Moto X too. Maybe it's so obvious I just don't get it. And maybe that's the case here with the iWatch or whatever iName that Apple's going to give it. But I'd love to hear what you think. Real easy to get a hold of me. It's owcradio@maxsales.com. Now, of course, you can always go to blog.maxsales.com and leave a message, leave your opinion right in the show notes on that page as well. Either one of those will work, and I'll read your responses here on OWC Radio. But yeah, let me know what you think, because I don't get it. What I do get, however, and it's a product that I've really wanted for a long time, is an actual Apple TV. Now, I've owned every single Apple TV that Apple has made. In fact, I still have my original Apple TV with an 80 gig hard drive. I like that because if my network went down, I could still watch content on it without streaming. But honestly, my network doesn't go down all that often. And even if the internet goes down, that doesn't really affect my home Wi-Fi. I could still talk to machines within the Wi-Fi network in the house itself. So I could still stream stuff from my iTunes library to my Apple TV. But the idea of having a fully fledged, either a macOS based, which at this point I don't think it would be, I think it would be iOS, built into the TV. You know, that would be a piece of hardware that would be very attractive to game developers. Anybody that's already making games for the iPad or the iPhone, it would be very simple to port over to the Apple TV. And not just one that's built into a theoretical Apple TV, the current Apple TVs. They beef up the hardware a little bit, give you a controller that you can actually use, because let's be honest, if you're playing a console game, you need the tactile sensation of a controller. You can't have just a piece of glass in your hand looking at another screen. It just simply wouldn't work. So give us a controller, give us games on the Apple TV. I get that market. That market makes a lot of sense. And maybe it doesn't make sense anymore for Apple to build an Apple TV inside of a flat panel anymore. Maybe that doesn't make sense. But I do want them to expand that side of the technology. They keep adding new channels and stuff to the current Apple TV, and I do appreciate that. And some of it's been very good. Fox just came out with an FX app, or it's soon to be released anyways, for the Apple TV that I'm really looking forward to checking out. They've got some programming that I really, really like the Fargo TV series. I don't know if you watched that this past year, but fantastic TV series. So we're getting a lot more content for it, but it's all television and movie stuff. And that's only half of what most people do, if that, with their actual TV. Games are just huge on iOS. You just go to iTunes and look at the charts. It's always full of top-heavy games at the top of the charts, besides Apple's own stuff, of course. So gaming is huge for iOS. You're seeing AAA titles for the iPad and the iPhone. Very easy to port those over to an Apple TV, a theoretical Apple TV, with a game controller. I think it's a market that, if Apple isn't already looking into, I would be very, very surprised. I think it's only a matter of time before this happens. And I want it to happen. Look, I'm a video game enthusiast. I have been since I got my first Atari in 1977. No, I think I got it in 1979, an Atari 2600. So I go old school. I mean, I've been playing video games since the home video game market was created. And then, of course, it crashed and came back again. I've been there through the whole thing. I love video games. It's one of my favorite forms of entertainment. And I really like gaming on the iPad and the iPhone. Well, not so much the iPhone anymore. I'm getting older and I have to wear glasses to see such a small screen. I have to get the little cheaters. But I do like it on the iPhone, but I still don't like it as much as console games, simply because I like the feel of a controller. I don't want to look at the screen and my hands covering part of the screen as I'm trying to play. It's okay. I prefer home consoles on the TV. And with the rich ecosystem that Apple has now with the apps for iOS, let's be honest, I think it makes sense to have it in the living room. And I want it. I bet you want it. The only people I don't think want it are Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony. And, of course, the micro, I guess you call them micro game systems that I like the Ouya that, based on Android, they're real small devices. You plug them into your TV and you download Android games and play them. I've got one. Meh. I'm not very impressed. Meh. That's the sound I make when I, M-E-H. Meh. So, I don't get the wearables, but I totally get expanding what the Apple TV is. And again, I'd love to hear what you think. Do you think Apple needs to expand the Apple TV? Do you think they're moving too slow? That's, to me, honestly, that's what I feel like. They're just dragging their feet with the Apple TV. What are you waiting for, Apple? Come on, give me an actual Apple TV that has a rich ecosystem of apps and games and productivity. And how cool would Skype be on your big TV? Maybe you can plug a little video camera into your Apple TV, put it on top of your television like you do the Wii or the Wii U little sensor bar that people use now. Put one of those on top. It has a little video camera, and you could do video chat in your living room with your TV. That would be cool. The possibilities are out there. And I don't think anybody else has hit it out of the ballpark yet. I think that Apple has a opportunity to be not just a significant player in the living room, but to be the dominant leader. Especially how they're tying in home automation at this point as well. Routing it through your Apple TV on your big screen just makes sense to me. So I think this is coming. I think it's. I think Apple probably has very ambitious plans here. I just want them to accelerate these plans. I want this stuff now. Me. I want it. Me. But I'm being truthful though too. I really do want this, and I think the market wants it. I think it's ready for it, and the time is now. I hope that we see it here this year in time for Christmas. That's my hope. I don't want to wait to 2015 to get to some of these things. And Tim Cook did promise us last year that there's going to be new product categories released in 2014 from Apple. Now, I think it's going to be more than just a security cable that they just released for the Mac Pro. I don't think that really counts to his new product categories. I really do think that the Apple TV is primed and ready for huge success. And I hope I'm right. I really do. And I get that I sound selfish when I say I want this myself. I do. And I am being selfish. I want this. And I bet a lot of you do as well. So once again, I'd like to ask you to send us feedback. It's owcradio@macsales.com. And if you're on your computer or you're on your iPhone and iPad and you're looking to upgrade your current Mac, the best place to do that is Otherworld Computing. Simply go to OWC and check out the kind of products that you think is going to make your Mac a better Mac. For instance, if you've got a conventional hard drive in your, say, iMac, do you know how much faster that iMac will boot up? How much faster everything will launch? How much quicker you can scroll through all those pictures in your iTunes library if you had an SSD in that iMac? It would blow your mind. I speak from experience. I put an SSD in my desktop 27-inch iMac, and it feels like a brand new machine. And I have an OWC SSD. I wasn't doing OWC radio at the time. I was working for a different company, and when it came time for me to spend my own money on my own machine, I knew to go to MacSales.com. Not just because I've done OWC in the past and I had relationships with people at that company, but because the products are so good and the support is so good, the way they treat customers. So if you're looking to expand your Mac's capabilities, maybe you need an external hard drive, maybe you should upgrade that RAM. If you have the stock RAM in your machine, trust me, doubling your RAM would make your machine so much more stable, so much more faster, and your life a lot better. Go to MacSales.com, and you won't regret it. So I'm going to wrap up this segment of OWC Radio. Coming up next is my interview with Larry, as promised at the top of the show. I hope you guys enjoy this interview. And again, owcradio@macsales.com. We'd love to hear feedback from you, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. And back here on OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 8. And as I said at the top of the show, we're doing an interview this week with Larry O'Connor. He is the founder and CEO of MacSales.com, Otherworld Computing, the man who makes it all happen. And it's about time we got you on the show, Larry. Welcome.
Hey, glad to be here.
Welcome to your own show.
Let me put it like that.
So one of the things that we've been talking about here on OWC Radio since we started, this year marks the 30th anniversary of the release of the Macintosh. And as I've also said on the show, it's not even called the Macintosh anymore. It's just Mac. That's how Apple refers to it. The documentation doesn't say Macintosh anymore. It's just Mac, which, as schematics, it really doesn't bother me. But it is a significant event. And everybody kind of celebrated it for a good week or two. I've tried to keep it going because I think being such a significant event, especially for me, and I know for you as well, I kind of wanted to celebrate that throughout the entire year. And one of the questions that I ask everybody is, what was your first Mac?
My first Mac goes back to 90 with a Mac 2CI. So a little late to the Mac party, but I was an Apple II user back in the beginning, pretty much the very beginning.
Yeah, you're still earlier than me. My first Mac was 94, so you beat me to the party by 4 years.
Fair enough.
So did you upgrade that old Mac?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Back in the day with Daystar, and we were already doing memory and hard drives and such. So, the primary purpose was honestly to produce ads.
Yeah. So it was a graphic machine is what you bought it for.
Absolutely. And that led to, OWC becoming a Mac-focused organization.
Now, were you doing the graphics yourself or did you have someone to do that for you? Because that was 1990. That was very early in the history of the company.
Certainly, it had been an outsourced a couple local people that we worked with, and there was perhaps some frustration with the creative design and what the turnaround was. And the bottom line was that it would be a good idea to get a machine and get Quark and do it myself. And I have to say the very first ad I did, which was just a little quarter page ad for A+ Insider magazine. This stuff seems super simple, and I definitely respect graphic arts, desktop publishing pros, to say the least. It was the deadline was, I believe, was 10 a.m. To say 2 days after I got the machine, and ahead of that deadline was an all-nighter in a race to beat the clock to get that little ad done. So,
here's your new machine. You don't have time to learn it. You have an ad that you have to do in 2 days.
Pretty much. Yes. My graphic guy had gone that time, and we didn't have the in-house team we have today. And the main individual that was at that time being dependent on, he had gone on a vacation, and bottom line is we did not have an ad.
No pressure there at all. So excluding Macs that are current, what's your favorite Mac of all time?
I really love the PowerBook 100.
Yeah.
It goes back to the 90s. I mean, it was a computer I took to, the truth be told, I took it to school. I used it for notes. It was small. It was effective for what I needed it for. And it had all the ports to plug in what I needed beyond it when I wasn't on the road. So that was my first portable Mac, and I still finally remember it.
Yeah. Are you still a portable Mac guy, or are you more of a desktop?
I use my portable as a desktop, and as opposed to a decade plus ago when I'd pretty much bring a drive back and forth. I had a computer at home and kept the laptop at the office for going to various places and booted when I could off an external drive. Today with SSDs, of course, you don't have a situation where an external drive is going to be, and there's always cases, and I'll stop myself and catch, but for general practical use, you now have internal drives that are just as fast as what you put on external. So long short of it is I remain a portable guy, and it's quite convenient, the kind of horsepower that's in these portable systems.
Yeah, I've got a 2011 15-inch MacBook Air. The only thing I'm missing right now is an SSD on it, and I don't go SSD because it's the machine that I record all the podcasts on, and I need a lot of space for that. But I don't feel the need.
That's a MacBook Pro, not a Mac. That's a MacBook Pro, you mean?
A MacBook Pro, I'm sorry, yes. I don't feel the need to buy a new machine. I don't think Apple's offering anything that's so significantly faster than the laptop I have right now that upgrading this is, to me, is more attractive than buying a brand new machine. And that's a lot of the customers at OWC, isn't it?
I would certainly agree with that. And in general, I think Apple is kind of moving away from support of a core base that wants flexibility, wants that extra capacity, wants to be able to have their choice between an optical drive and a second actual storage drive in their system. And for me, having a hard drive in the optical bay along with a SSD in the main bay gives me the best of all worlds. I've got built-in backup, got that built-in additional space for archive stuff, and have the SSD with capacity for running the apps and doing the real work.
Apple released a low-cost 2014 iMac that I've been very critical of. It seems like it's kind of a step back, especially for the price. What's your thoughts on that new iMac?
And from the moment we saw the specs, I was honestly complaining. I would say in the same boat with you. It's from one direction and one angle you look at it and say it, for a lot of people, that machine for a base consumer, it probably offers a lot of what somebody doing word processing and web browsing would need. From the other angle, looking at the delta between that and the next step up, I don't want to use too harsh a term for it, but you're getting a heck of a lot less for a very small difference in cost, and it seems to be a really poor value.
Yeah, it's $200 between the two.
It's again, it was, I would call it disappointing at best with respect to what they took away from the machine, with respect to that small difference in cost.
If this
and
was
$200 is
right. Yeah,
it's still like, significant. I'm not going to $200 is still $200 is $200, but for what you're losing for that $200, the value is substantially diminished. And something else, it's the first iMac where they soldered the memory.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. I really don't. I don't understand the logic behind that. At $799.
The logic behind it.
Well, go ahead.
I really hate to put it out there, but draw them in, and granted, it's not exactly the 21.5 is still a real difficult machine to work on in general. You got to cut the screen off just to change the memory and the next model up. But this is one step further towards if you don't buy it with the memory you need, or in this case, if 8 gigs becomes limiting for you and you need more than 8 gigs of memory, which is the max you can get it with, suddenly you have to buy a new machine.
Right.
And they're taking away user serviceability. They're taking away, in a lot of respects, lifespan on these systems. A Mac like the one you've got, you have options to continue to upgrade and enhance that machine to keep it going for, customers from 2008 model systems are still very happy with what those systems do today when they upgrade the memory, upgrade their SSDs, even machines that are older than that, even back on the G5s and G4s, if it's got the software they need. These little enhancements, make those machines incredibly effective. And in this particular case, now you got a system that's pigeonholed, just like a tablet, the iPad, it is what it is, and if you need it to do something more, you buy a new iPad. Unfortunately, that's the only way. Disappointing.
If it would have came in at maybe $799, I would have been a huge fan of it. I think it would have been, for some people, it would have been a good solution. But man, for the money that they're charging for it, to me, it doesn't make any sense. And it really does feel like their limited choice and forcing you to buy something better in a shorter time frame than you probably would have. You know, most people probably get 4 to 5 years out of each Mac. 5 years is probably pushing it. But with this machine, you're going to be choking out in 2 years, and you're going to want something better, and you can't upgrade it. So I was a little disappointed in that, to be honest. But Apple's done some weird things lately. Another topic I wanted to bring up is your thoughts on both the Mac Pro and the lack of, well, honestly, it seems apathy on Apple's part about the Mac Mini. It was a great machine, and just nothing's been done with the Mac Mini in forever.
Well, and I tell you, be careful what you wish for, because you look at the Mac Mini, you look at the MacBook Pro 13-inch, you know, I'm talking about the one with the optical drive.
Yeah.
Obviously, the 13-inch MacBook Pro is likely soon to be history. You know, it'll milk it until it, it makes sense no longer to carry it versus update it. That hasn't been updated since 2012 now, which is, of course, when they discontinued the 15-inch version. In the case of the Mac Mini, you know, my fear would be instead of another Mac Mini, it'd be a Mac Micro that just with a fixed SSD and the ports and no memory soldered, no user expandability, and nothing internal. I mean, going to the Mac Pro, the segment that buys a Mac Mini is certainly not the original target audience for the Mini back in 2004. I mean, it was a low cost machine. At that time, intended it to be an entry-level machine, and it's evolved as just a really efficient machine that, whether it's home servers or even, business servers, people who want to deploy them across, a business. I mean, they're a machine with a lot of flexibility. You have various memory options. You've got two drive bays inside. Our availability for two drive bays, it's, very energy efficient. It's kind of coming to a segment that is very loyal and very appreciative of what that machine offers. And they take away the drive base, take away the memory flexibility, and to me, it no longer appeals to that base. And that base also, just kind of look at the Mac Pro and the apathy there with respect to internal storage. Sure, you got Thunderbolt ports, and Thunderbolt is absolutely fantastic. I mean, I love Thunderbolt. I mean, it opens up a lot of long-term opportunities for ways you can add enhancements and upgrades to a system externally. But for storage, for some of these base things, I can tell you, a lot of people don't like to have clutter on their desk unnecessarily. They don't want to have external boxes floating around. Having everything you need in internal, certainly at least having the base components, the base storage, the things you absolutely need for your workflow to be inside the machine, is kind of expected. To force people, you got a beautiful box. A beautiful cylinder. In the case
of the it's Mac not a
Pro.
Box anymore at all.
Pardon my slip there, but you got great form, but from a functional point of view, now you got to plug in external storage. You have no choice. So, it looks great, but you're going to have you're forced to plug in external peripherals to bring it up to where it needs to be for you to get your work done. And that's that seems it's part of a trend, in my opinion, of more focus on the form versus the functionality.
I was just going to ask you that. It seems to me that Apple is really pushing design over functionality. And they have been for a while.
I certainly see no way to argue against that. And you look at the iMac 2012, they discontinued, before the thing was even available, they discontinued what had been the number one selling computer system in the U.S., at a time when the 2012, the new model, wasn't ready to ship.
Mm-hmm.
They lost substantial sales volume because they didn't have an iMac available during the holiday season, which I think Tim Cook even later said he regretted the decisions made for that launch. But to me, more importantly, and contributing to that situation was a focus on this slimming form, which required a new bonding technique in terms of the manufacturer. But it didn't really offer anything functionally. And when you look at the new iMac versus the previous generation iMac from the front, damn machines look virtually identical.
Right. I never understood the skinny iMac. Who cares if it's skinny or not? It's the thickness of a desktop computer. It makes you're not saving any desktop space by making it a little skinnier. To me, it made no sense. It's aesthetics for aesthetics' sake. That was it.
I guess, if you want to stare at the back or stare at it from the side, see that's great. But most people, it's on a desk. I mean, there's not a lot of visibility even where that slimming went. And they compromise on the 21.5 inch. They can compromise in terms of, I mean, it's the only way to get into the machine is cutting. It's a glue tape that you have to cut through. You can replace. I mean, the screen comes off, but you cutting the screen off to get in there and service it. Yep. On the 27 inch, at least you have external accessibility for the memory slots, and they did a great job on that. I mean, it's the 2012 27.5 inch iMac, and it applies to the the 2013, and it's just the current model. Now the memory slots have the best access and the greatest ease of upgrade of any iMac, of any pretty much any Mac that they've ever put out there. That being said, if you have a problem with your hard drive, which I'm not even going to go into the other details there, you once again are cutting the screen off to get to the drive. It makes the machines, all these machines are making less user serviceable. And even if you have a user, and again, let's say that that's the minority in terms of people who are going to, self-service. And in reality, obviously our customer base, the majority, of customers are doing the self-service. And we focus on educating and showing customers, showing people, how to service the machines. And by and large, it's these things are user serviceable, but looking at the masses out there that aren't going to touch their machines, I mean, they'll say like it is, you still have a higher cost now for that service when a drive fails, which are, it's not an if, it's a when a hard drive fails.
Absolutely.
It will happen. Now you're going to have whether you go to Apple, it's already very expensive. You go to an outside service, it's still going to be expensive. It's more complex, it's more involved, it takes more time to service these machines, and it costs more. I mean, I hope that's not the intention of these aesthetics. That it's truly just a focus, in my opinion, on too much waiting on the wrong thing, too much form without enough consideration of the function. But it's effectively forcing or pushing people towards an upgrade cycle. The machine has the drive failed. I guess it's time to buy a new one, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, especially at the price that Apple charges, it's a premium price for the computers. Whereas, we've both been around long enough to have the Mac versus PC debate, but Microsoft came out last week talking about low-cost $99 PCs, $199 PCs, $249 PCs. I just wonder how Apple competes with that on top of, you can't work on these machines, some of them, anymore, without an X-Acto blade and a sterile environment. I think that Apple really does need to kind of step back and look what the competition is. It seems to me that they've had a lot of success, but I just worry that they're not getting out of their own way. They're forgetting a huge segment of their users that, we're being underserved.
Well, this was their core customer base not too long ago.
Yeah. I mean,
and that, it's interesting that at this point, in the looking at the consumer side of the equation and the mass market that they can so easily discard, what was a significantly large core group. And that's the other thing I think you have. I mean, I wrote about it yesterday in the Tips and Deals. In fact, I was looking at Tips and Deals from 8 years ago. I mean, this is not a new pipe dream by any means. And, I think a max mini, I'll give up, I'll drop the PCI Express ports. Thunderbolt, for the most part, is fine if you need. Well, the Mac Pro should have PCI Express ports, but I'm not going to go there right now either. For a Max Mini, I'll give people a couple, 3.5, even if it's a couple 2.5-inch bays. I think with SSDs today, that's probably fine. When the notebook drives, which are up to 2 terabytes per bay, give us a couple 2.5-inch bays inside, give us 4 memory slots, plenty of Thunderbolt ports, heck, keep FireWire 800 on, this Max Mini. And I think you'd have a large customer base, lining up to buy it. People who have, who've had Macs for a long time that aren't satisfied with the options that are currently on the table today.
I know I would be interested in it myself.
You find those people are out there, or I tell you, option B, I bet they'd have millions of new users and old users pointing up. If I could, and I'm putting a price that may be higher than it needs to be, but I think this price would be portable, and even though it's more than these low-cost PCs right. You talk about, I bet if you saw that OS 1010 come out in a unrestricted version, you put it on your old hardware, here's some base compatibility, other than that you're on your own. I'd pay $299 in a heartbeat to have OS 10 that I could run on, OS X that I could run on whatever hardware I wanted.
Oh, in a heartbeat. You can shrink wrap that.
Don't worry about supporting it.
No. And they could shrink wrap that in a bubble thing and put it on a shelf at Walmart, and they couldn't keep them in stock. I mean, I've said that for years, it's a huge market that nobody is going after right now. But I think Apple would do well. Let's switch gears a little bit. We haven't talked pretty much at all. I mean, we've communicated via email, but the last time that you and I spoke, you had a beautiful facility in Woodstock, Illinois. And then, you know, that was 4 years ago. And now you have a brand new facility in Austin.
6 years.
6 years?
Mm-hmm.
No, the last time we talked was 2010.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Sorry, the facility in Woodstock opened up in, we christened it, opened it, you know, brought it into operational status in about April of 2008.
Right. I meant the last time you and I talked in person, you only had that one big facility, which is a beautiful building. I talked about it extensively on the original OWC radio. We finally launched OWC Radio 2.0, and you've got a brand new facility in Austin, Texas, which blew me away. I had no idea that was even in the works back in the day. How did Austin come about, and why did it come about?
You know, we have a significant team of talented individuals in Woodstock. That being said, being able to continue to grow and continue to have resources and the kind of talent that, you know, we need to grow, and we found that that particular region, you know, didn't necessarily offer everything that, you know, was, well, quite frankly, was, you know, going to be key to OWC's future.
Mm-hmm.
And another big issue with that particular region, we have, well, we have relatively harsh winters, and, you know, we don't have any coast to speak of. You know, like Michigan certainly is sort of nearby, but we found it to be very difficult to recruit people into that particular area. And I won't go into Illinois. Illinois's got its own challenges right now.
Right.
So looking at different locations around the country, and the fact that we already had a manufacturing base in Austin, the decision to for Austin, Texas, became a really easy one. There's a lot of talent down here, involved in technology, engineering, on the creative side, and it was a great fit for us to get a base established here, and something I wish I'd done years prior, because it's quite exciting, and it's a real a good addition and compliment to the team we have in Illinois.
So
I should also add, we have a small team in Nevada as well, as we have shipping and logistics now out of Nevada for the southwestern region.
So OWC is nationwide, not just you ship nationwide and world. You as a company are nationwide at this point. You have employees all over the place.
we absolutely do.
Now, you actually personally moved to, and your family, you moved to Austin to open this new facility. Was that a kind of a culture shock for you and your family?
Not so much. I mean, Austin is a kind of a melting pot. I mean, you have a lot of people flowing into the area, so it was, we're welcome. It's got a lot of Midwestern. It still has a good Midwestern feel to it, despite being in the middle of Texas.
Right.
So it was a real smooth transition.
I've always been interested in Austin. I always wanted to go down there for the South by Southwest festival. How crazy does that town get during that?
Typically we leave town during.
Oh, really?
My family does anyhow. Yeah, it becomes rather a little crazy downtown that week, actually those 2 weeks.
Yeah, I've seen stuff online, and I often wonder what it would be like to live in a place. I mean, Austin is big, but it's not that big for that kind of an event to happen over an extended period of time, especially if you worked downtown, if your business was down there. It seems like it would just be unbearable.
We're about 6-7 blocks from where the convention center is.
Huh.
But it's not where we are. We're away from. We see the crowds moving in that direction. We're not so much affected right on our street, which is nice. We're far enough off where it's basically people are coming to park on the street. They're not. It's not really interfering with us. But nonetheless, it's still becomes a zoo. How to say, with traffic and everything else. And it's great. I mean, it's a good event. It's good for the city. And we'll be participating next year event.
I look forward to hearing more about that. I'm sure you can't give too much information away, but before that happens, I'd love to have someone from OWC back on this show and discuss what's going to happen, because I think that would be really cool. One of the things that I saw get posted up on the, well, I'm also on the press list, so I got the email, but I saw it up on the blog.maxsales.com website. Somebody that we had on the original OWC radio, I've met her a few times. I think she's a fantastic person. Jen Soleil was appointed the president of OWC. How did that come about? Because I know Jen's been with OWC for a long time.
Well, you know, at some point you have to delegate things, and yeah. You know, I couldn't have a better second in command to see those things delegated to. She certainly embraces the vision and the culture of OWC, and it was a quite frankly an obvious fit. I mean, she's worked, you know, she's been with OWC since, you know, we were, you know, about, you know, 6-7 employees back in the 90s, and it's certainly experienced that, you know, how to say it, both the pain and the glory. You know, as this organization has grown and evolved, so it was an exceptionally the right candidate to fill the role.
I think that it was a brilliant move. You know, I spent quite a few hours in the Woodstock location, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and I got to know her pretty well. I spent quite a few hours in her office waiting for a room to open up to do some filming, or waiting for someone to wrap up some business so I can interview them for the podcast. So I got to know her pretty well. She's brilliant. I think that it was a fantastic choice on your part to promote her to that. And I think it's it just shows you, to me, it shows me that you're running the company the right way, which brings me to another topic I wanted to bring up. I was just kind of curious. You are an American business success story. Do you ever stop and kind of reflect on that? I mean, I know you're busy. Getting you on this show was hard, and this is your company's podcast, so that's how busy you are. But do you ever kind of step back and look to see what you're doing, and realizing that it's people like you that really built this country and have been continuously building this country for 200 years? And you're a huge part of that now. Do you ever get to reflect on that?
You know, I have to say that I feel very fortunate for the opportunity and the people that have come in around me to make OWC and help me make OWC what it is. So that being said, you know, we're very fortunate, you know, for the opportunities we've got in this country, and it's certainly, you know, been a pleasure to see things, you know, grow and build and be a part the way I can in terms of, you know, that whole that whole thing. But in terms of, you know, looking at it you know, from the outside back in, you know, there's great opportunity here, and I think there's opportunity today and well into the future for everybody in this country. And I'm just, again, very fortunate and, you know, for the opportunities that I've been able to take advantage of and keep things moving forward. So I really don't have a good answer there, because I there's always, you know, there's always opportunity. And
well, I think
I don't feel all that. I don't kind of put myself in that.
Well, I will, because but you're right in the middle of it, and it's you. But from someone on the outside looking in, you're a prime example of what dedication, hard work, and a vision, being a good leader. These are all the kind of things that a successful business needs, and a successful business leader needs to have. And those are qualities that you have. And I think it's reflected in the company. I think it's a fantastic company, and it really reflects your leadership and what you've done to get there. Now, I'm not trying to butter you up for a raise here or anything, but you are someone, look, even before OWC Radio, when I was doing my own podcast, I've had you on that show a number of times in the past, and I've interviewed you at, you know, years ago at Macworld Expo, and so I always felt that the same way as I do now. I felt the same way then, and so I'm not trying to butter you up. I just, I want to make sure that you appreciate how much of an inspiration you are to a lot of people, including me, that, you know, you've put in the hours, you put in the time, you've made a lot of sacrifices. And you show people like me it's possible to do, and it's possible to be successful doing it, but you have to be willing to make sacrifices. And I just hope that, you know, you realize that you do have that effect on other people.
I appreciate you saying that, and in the same vein, you know, I also have to say that I respect and appreciate and thank our veterans and current men and women in the service who, again, you know, make this country and protect this country so that, you know, again, these opportunities are here.
Absolutely. Let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about a product. I saw there's a blog entry for benchmark speeds for the OWC Thunder Bay 4. 1,786 megabytes per second transfer speed. Is this the fastest RAID OWC has ever made? Because this seems blazingly fast to me.
Yeah, we love Thunderbolt, and in terms of the possibilities and the performers you can pull out of Thunderbolt, it's absolutely incredible. In terms of RAID performance, we actually have some products on the enterprise side that even exceed those levels. But in terms of, you know, a solution that you can direct connect to your Mac and provide absolutely, you know, pretty much endless performance capability, we've actually, you know, with additional units rated together, you know, we've seen over 3 gigabytes per second, over 3,000 megabytes per second. So in short, this is absolutely the fastest RAID solution that we've deployed at this level, you know, for pretty much anybody to take advantage of.
It's I can't imagine transfer speeds that. What I'm trying to figure out is my daily life. Why would I need something like this that's that fast? And then I look at my system and I go, I just need it. That's what I want. I hate sitting around waiting. And boy, you're not waiting for this thing at all. This is really geared towards, I would assume, graphic professionals, those doing a lot of heavy video work. That's what this is designed for. It's not the guy with the big iTunes library.
Yeah, the big iTunes library will, you know, never, you know, achieve, or I should say, have a necessity or benefit for those sorts of transfer speeds. It's nice, I guess, if you're doing backups and want your backup to complete in a snap, but that's probably a little bit overkill for sort of thing. You get into professional video work, and actually, there's a ton of that. I mean, now with cameras, 4K cameras being, you know, even under, you know, well under $5,000.
That's crazy.
It's amazing. You know, this is stuff that was, you know, literally, you know, a million or millions, you know, just a few years ago. It's pretty incredible, you know, what you can do with a Mac in terms of, you know, the editing and the, you know, with these cameras in terms of the profession. Well, I mean, you can't discern, I mean, with these cameras today, you know, and that price range, I mean, this is stuff that's being, you know, put on TV. And again, you'd never know, you know, this was any, you know, filmed with anything different than, again, what costs, you know, exponentially more just a few years ago. So these solutions are absolutely geared for people who have high bandwidth needs, which, you know, typically come with video. And once you get past, you know, 1,300-1,400 megs a second with most of the current loads, I mean, you're real time, and that's where you need to be.
A few episodes ago, I talked about something that I kind of got passionate about, and it really made me angry. And I'd like to get your reaction to this as well. A couple of companies, and there's no reason to go into names here, got in some hot water after changing the internals of SSDs after product reviews were done and it was released to the public. And that really makes me angry. Not just because of my association with OWC, but as a consumer myself, that really makes me mad when more than one company would do this. And I would just love to get your take on it. As a company who produces award-winning SSDs, how does this make you feel as part of that industry?
You know, it's honestly pretty aggravating. I mean, you look at benchmarks in general, and a lot of the testing is done out there. They don't, you know, as real world as their synthetic tests attempt to be, they really don't reflect real world operation. And it's really nothing new, although, you know, sometimes it's, you know, it's intentional. Other times it's potentially, it's probably just something that's come along with, you know, a rev change. And I get more into, you know, the rev change thing in a moment here, but it's frustrating. I mean, you should, as a consumer, if it's advertised or listed or tested a certain way based on a part number, especially if the company provided that unit for review, you know, it's certainly less than responsible,
if not
deceiving and deceptive.
Right. It smelled like someone's gaming the system to me, to be honest. That's what it smelled like to me.
Yeah, and in one particular case, and not naming names, you know, I think that some of the stuff has to do with, especially, you know, a larger company, disconnect between the marketing side and the actual, you know, engineering and just spec side. I think the change that was made in one of the examples really wasn't necessarily something that was intended to be a problem, but this here's a new model, they shipped it out. The specs actually technically supported use of either kind of component, and they obviously they reviewed the one that was more favorable in performance, but that's probably the one that they were initially producing with. It wasn't, I mean, there's some of these, I mean, it's some companies, I mean, in their marketing, we tend to have people who know the product really well throughout OWC. I mean, they're in all of our departments. I mean, they use the products, they understand the products. In a lot of organizations, somebody talking about the product, is talking off, maybe talking off talking point. They really don't understand the product itself. And perhaps that's also why you see a lot more hype. I mean, we're not a hype-focused organization. We stick to the facts. We present our product, as it really is. When you have a marketing department that's disconnected from, the real world, I suppose in a sense, they have an advantage, perhaps plausible deniability in terms of how they hype up their product. The other the other change where, they actually had a processor change out, and that's a little, that was a little more, I would say, potentially underhanded. But in general, we produce, and this goes, if you look at all of our product descriptions and the specifications, we list, very specific attributes and components and configuration types that, we stick to. I mean, we disclose this information in a lot greater detail than you'll find pretty much for any of our competitors. And, we stick to those. We're building a product to be best for, the application at hand. We're building a product, by capacity that's built with a configuration to give the best performance for those capacities. There's much, I guess more efficient would be the wrong term, but more cost-effective ways to produce some of these drives. But that's at the expense of performance, and that's something we don't do. We also certainly could do things to tweak our drives to, I suppose, change how they test in these synthetics. But, again, we're focused on our true customer and seeing products that consistently perform and consistently deliver to the expectations that our, we should think our customers should have, in the real world, not, just how they're going to test, in some benchmark.
Well, OWC has always embraced the press and the product reviewers, too. You guys don't shy away from letting a variety of websites and publications test your products in the real world and publish those results. You guys have always been very confident you're going to score and do really well there. And I think that goes a long way to saying kind of the philosophy of OWC. You're not, you don't rip people off. You have, as a company, you have integrity. And, I'm used to dealing with OWC in these matters. So it really does make me angry when I see other companies kind of gaming the system. And, It really does get my cackles up.
Well, all we can do over time is try to educate and make people aware of why we're different. And there's another difference there as well. With respect to how we build our product, and we also get certifications for different audio products, different video products, different applications that stick, because we're not changing out every other week to some other configuration or processor because it's cheaper to build this week, or that's what we decided to shift over to. I mean, we build the product consistently, again, because it's not flavor of the week because of cost or other considerations. It's built the way that we find to be best for the application performance and reliability.
I've got two more things before, I know you've got a lot of other things to do, but I've got two more things. One's a question and one's a comment. The question, let me find it on my sheet here. I just had it. I hate when that happens. How many times and what is your procedure for unsolicited product ideas from customers? Because you guys have very loyal customers, very tech-savvy customers. I have to imagine some of these people kind of try to bring you ideas. Hey, you guys should do this or you should do that. How do you handle things like that?
We have a submission form. Customers can kick us feedback, and we often do get a lot of interesting feedback. And when it's call it free advice or just a product suggestion without any, any hooks, we have a standard policy that they understand that they're not going to we may mention them, we may involve them depending, but it's there's no obligation. And then of course sometimes we get people with other ideas or complete product that they've almost say concocted to be the wrong word, and they were always open and receptive, although, you know, by and large, the products that we put forth, they certainly are internally engineered, but it's feedback on the products that we're shipping and also products that we may be shipping just as a reseller of. I mean, we're kind of, we got that hybrid thing going. We're a manufacturer with a, you know, extensive resources in terms of product development and engineering, while also being a distributor and reseller for other third-party products. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to have products that are, you know, best for the Mac and best for our customers. But we listen to customer feedback on all these products, and more than anything else, feedback on existing products or just general wish lists, you know, absolutely do drive, you know, future developments.
Lastly, I posted out on Facebook, and I asked, anybody have any questions? Unfortunately, I waited too late in the day. It was like an hour before we actually sat down to record this episode. So I didn't give enough time to give people an opportunity. But I said, does anybody have any questions or comments to pass on to Larry at OWC? And there was a few, and I already worked those in. But the one that I saw right before we started recording, I thought was pretty appropriate. It's from Dan Knight. He's the publisher of Low End Mac. I'm sure you're familiar with Dan.
Sure.
And I actually know Dan personally. He only lives about an hour and a half from me. Nice guy, great website, and he said via Facebook he wanted me to pass along a huge thank you for learning how much RAM each Mac can really use and for supporting older Macs. You know, low-end Mac is about the older Macs, and OWC, you guys have been supporting those older Macs and continue to support them since day one. That's your business.
Absolutely. Again, we feel these machines are built to last, and as long as it's doing what it needs to do for the person using it, you know, why create a situation where somebody's going to have to, you know, toss it aside? As long as it still works and it's doing the job, hey, we're happy to have. You know, we still sell 72-pin SIMs and 30-pin SIMs for Macs from the 90s. And you know what? There's obviously, they're not giant movers today, but, you know, when, you know, somebody has a system that's running, that's doing something they want it to do, and you need a memory module replaced and such, you know, we're glad to have that product and keep those machines going. I'm always been a waste-not-want-not kind of guy, and it's, you know, it's our pleasure to, you know, maintain availability for, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, keeps it fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Larry, thanks so much for being on OWC Radio this week. I really do appreciate it, and I know that the listeners out there getting an opportunity to learn more about you and OWC would appreciate it, too. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're very welcome, Tim. We'll do this more often.